Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to The Ride Home, a podcast where we explore all things fellowship, the scriptures, change life stories, interviews, social issues, and anything else the Spirit might lead us to ponder. The goal of The Ride Home podcast is to encourage others to draw near to God, knowing, as James 4:8 tells us, He will draw near to us. Welcome, everyone. It's great to have you with us here at The Ride Home, and we are privileged today to have Dr. Mark Bailey with us. Hello, Dr. Bailey.
Hey, Mickey. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Dr. Bailey has been a long-term friend of fellowship. He's been the chancellor at Dallas Theological Seminary, I think is one of the finest seminaries in the world. He's been the chancellor there now for 2 years after serving 19 years as a seminary's fifth president and continues his role as senior professor in the Bible Exposition Department. And students will tell you he is one of their favorite professors. In addition to his years at Dallas Theological Seminary, he's pastored various churches in Arizona and Texas. He was a seminar instructor for Walk Through the Bible Ministries for 20 years. And is in demand for Bible conferences and other preaching engagements all over the country. His overseas ministries have included Venezuela, Argentina, Hungary, China. He's also a regular tour leader in Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, Turkey, Greece, and Rome. And we've shared some of those trips together. So how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Well, great. How is retirement?
Well, I love it. I would like to say I'm a master of my own schedule, but I'm probably a victim of my own schedule.
Yeah.
It's more relaxed. I miss the camaraderie of the leadership and the fellowship, but I don't miss the agendas. And so I can stay involved as much as I want and can take a break as much as I want.
If you had known that you would enjoy it this much, you might have done it earlier, huh?
I might have. Yeah.
Well, I looked back at my old calendars wondering, now, okay, when did we first have Dr. Bailey here? And the earliest I can find on my calendars is February of 1994, but we think it's probably earlier than that.
I think it might have been earlier, maybe even the late 80s, but probably around 90.
Yeah.
But it's been great to see the progress and the ministry here, and the fellowship has been wonderful.
Absolutely. And we've had the wonderful privilege of traveling together in Israel and Turkey and Greece. And those are some cherished memories that Denise and I have of traveling with you and Barbie.
Well, likewise. Those are great memories.
Well, and by the way, how is Barbie doing? Because she had surgery recently.
She just had surgery a month ago, and so she's slowly, sort of 2 days forward and a half a day back, and it's a long road to recovery, but she's doing well, and she's her perky self in terms of her personality and her walk with God, and so that that helps a whole lot.
Well, we miss having her here with us this weekend, but we wish Barbie the best in her recovery. And we would look forward to you coming back with Barbie another time. Now, in terms of our long relationship and friendship, we've gotten to know your family through the years, and you are Baba to your grandchildren. Tell us about your family and how everything is going.
Well, I have two wonderful boys, two great daughter-in-laws who could be our own, and six grandchildren. They range from... Fiona is our only girl. We call her baby girl, and she'll turn 18 this year. She's a junior.
Your baby girl.
Yeah, she's our baby girl, and she loves her Baba. She loves her Grammy even more, I think. And so we're trying to spoil her as much as we can. But yeah. She's the only girl of the grandkids, and then we have five boys underneath her. But she'll be a senior, and she's got a brother who's 15, and another brother who's 12, and then our. A second set from my second son. His go from 10, 9 down to 4.
Oh, wow. So they keep you busy.
They do.
I bet they love coming to your house.
Oh, they love it, and we have a blast.
Now, what do they call Barbie?
Grammy.
Grammy.
Yep.
Grammy and Baba.
She likes that, and my granddaughter gave me Baba, and it stuck, and both my daughter-in-laws call me Baba, so it just has stuck.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Barbie, she's an author.
She is.
And she has some books, and I want you to tell us about her books and about how our listeners can find them.
Barbie grew up on the mission field and has a deep background of walking with the Lord, and she's a real student of the Word. She was a school teacher for a number of years until I became president, and then we started traveling together, but She says the best gift I've ever gotten her was the Logos, software.
So oh, yeah.
Allows
love
her
it.
To dig into it. But she's written three books that have been published. They're volumes 1, 2, and 3 of a series called Meeting Girls Like Us, which are unknown women of the Bible, like Ezekiel's wife and people like that. And she does all the background work behind it. But she's a wonderful women's speaker. Conference speaker for women as well, but she's a good author, and so she loves to study, loves to write, and so she's working on the fourth volume, as we speak.
Great. What sort of projects are you involved in right now that you can tell us about? I know you've written a lot.
Well, I've written a lot of chapters in other people's books, and only a few that where my name appears on the cover, but that's fine. I just finished a chapter on a book on teaching the Bible that the seminary is going to be publishing with a group of the faculty members. We're doing a project for our upcoming centennial, which is 2024. The school will be 100 years old, and so we're working on a one-volume summary of the scriptures. And so I just completed the section on Zechariah. Working on conference speaking, writing articles for magazines, things like that. So. Just staying busy.
And you teach at your church?
I teach. I'm on a rotation staff periodically at the church.
Christ Chapel
in Fort Worth. And then teach at the seminary. I teach a couple of courses a year and monitor an online course or two as well.
Yeah. Oh, I know the students enjoy that. And I know you love the classroom.
I do.
Well, I want to ask you a question. DTS changed a lot during your tenure as president. What are some of the things that you and your team accomplished that gives you the greatest satisfaction?
That's a great question. I was given a charge by the board, and especially by the chairman of the board when I became the president, to basically be the guardian, of our doctrinal heritage. And I have enough loyalty to our history, enough loyalty to the men who preceded me. I've always said that the DNA of DTS is deeper than any one of its leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And being the fifth of now six presidents, now that Mark Yarbrough has become the sixth president, I had an obligation to honor those who founded the school, who led the school, who hired me to teach, and ultimately mentored me into my roles there. And so what didn't change was our doctrinal perspective. And we're looking, as we mentioned, to going on 100 years of history and to stay faithful, not to budge from our founding fathers. And it has to be articulated in different context and in different terminology in one sense. But the truth of the scripture doesn't change. And the summation of our doctrinal statement of the scriptures has not changed. And Lord willing, it won't change.
Mm.
So there were some things that we didn't want to change. There were other things we knew that we needed to change. I inherited a 95-year-old campus at the time,
mm-hmm.
and so those who have been involved in operations understand the pain and the agony of deferred maintenance, things that you should do and could do. And so when I became president, we had about a $25 million deferred maintenance tag that it would take to bring the campus up to speed.
Wow.
They said I was the most destructive president that has ever been there and the most constructive in the same sense because—
I would say transformative.
Yeah, there we go.
You transformed a lot of buildings. Yeah,
and so we tore down a whole bunch and refurbished some and built new ones.
Yeah.
But when I left, we had less than $5 million of deferred maintenance. And
wow.
So from an operational side, that wasn't important. I wanted to leave the school better than I found it.
Right.
And the facilities, while they're not the only thing, they are a big thing because that's where you meet. And so air conditioning, lights, heating, no mold, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
That's a challenge for the operation side. The enrollment grew, almost doubled during those times. And all of this is what God and the team did. It's not personal at all.
Right.
And so building a faculty for the next generation, building a student body, in the transitions of multiple generations, that was a fascinating experience as well. But God enabled us to move into Chinese, put all of our courses into Chinese, then now Spanish. If the Lord tarries, we'd love to do Arabic. And so just watching God take us to a global level. Which was, and we always, our biggest prayer request was always, what would God allow us to do?
Yeah.
What would God allow? And what would he shine his face on as we prayed about where we should go and what we should do? And God's been very gracious to us with regard to that.
Oh, that's so encouraging to hear. I mean, faithful to the doctrine, that's not easy in today's culture. Yep. There are a lot of people who are just dropping out of the race because they're tired of fighting it. Yep. But you hung in there during some of the toughest times, and you've got a guy in there now, Dr. Mark Yarborough, who will carry on that same tradition.
Right.
And then when we talk about the campus and the buildings, if you've never been to Dallas Theological Seminary, sometime when you are in Dallas, if you'll just put that in your maps and go down there and visit the campus. I know they would love for you to do that. Just take a tour, go in the bookstore, because it's a beautiful campus. Did you see yourself when you took that position as such a change agent?
No, I didn't. I'm not an entrepreneur by nature. Mm-hmm. I'm a team builder and a team player. You know, if I was a professional basketball player, I'd be a player coach. I love staying in the game. I love, building a team. So building a team is probably the best thing that I did in building a great team of people around me and turning them loose with their gifts.
Yeah.
And that was a challenge. And I needed them, wanted them. And a lot of the innovation that God allowed during that period of time came from the team and their ideas and things that I thought, no, I'm not sure we ought to. God overrode and said, yes, you should. And watched him take it. We got into the online side of education,
right,
which none of us really liked. None of us would prefer it. I mean, if you gave me my chance, I'd want everybody face-to-face all the time. But knowing the nature of what was going on in theological education in the world, and had we not done some of those early decisions when the COVID hit, we were well prepared to pivot within a three-day period,
right,
to meet all of our students and not to skip a beat with regard to our courses, both on the campus and around the world. And so that aspect of innovation that came, you know, from team members who said, hey, I think we could do this and I think we could do that. And a lot of the slowly adopters suddenly realized how absolutely critical it was to be prepared to do that.
Well, the same thing happened with us with live stream. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't prepared for that. And when it came down to having to do that, the equipment wasn't available because everyone around the country was trying to to get that same equipment.
Yeah.
But somehow, our guys found it.
Yep.
I don't know how they did,
yeah,
but
yep,
they found the equipment and they made it happen. But our world is changing. And, you know, I've taken some of the online classes at DTS, and the platform that you all use is phenomenal. I love what you do. And
well, you're kind. You are one of the reasons why we went as far as we did, mm-hmm, with regard to our master's in Christian leadership and things like that, was guys like you and men like you who are already implanted in ministry couldn't take 5 years away or 6 years away and walk, mm-hmm, away. And so having people like you in mind was probably some of the motivation for us to build that out, to attract people who are in ministry anywhere in the world who could come along, get the training that they needed to stay right where they were and continue on their ministry.
You said, this guy needs help.
No. You wanted it, and we wanted to provide it.
And I remember meeting Mark Yarborough,
yep,
right when y'all were getting all that started, and Mark had a lot of that assignment, I remember, back in those,
yep,
days.
Yep.
And that's when he and I became friends. And I just love your online courses. And people listening to this, I encourage you to check out the online courses at Dallas Theological Seminary. Now you are the chancellor. Explain to us, what does a chancellor do?
Well, Chuck Swindoll was our chancellor emeritus. And when he was chancellor, we just bumped him up when I came along.
There you go.
A chancellor at Dallas Seminary is not responsible for administration. Mm. It's a more of a public relations, cheerleading, contributing through speaking, writing, appearances, things like that, that are really designed to encourage the current president and his administration. It just, we've had a wonderful history of Dallas Seminary. When I became president, Dr. Walvoord, who was the second president, Dr. Campbell, who was the third, and Dr. Swindoll was the fourth, all four of us had offices on the campus at the same time.
How about that?
And that's a bit unheard of in education,
yeah,
or ministry, because, and all of us view our role as meeting the mission,
mm-hmm,
contributing to the mission, and having a fraction of the action, so to speak, of what God is doing at DTS.
Right.
And it's always been a great camaraderie, a great teamwork, a lot of common brotherhood of support and prayer and encouragement. And so I never felt threatened. I always felt encouraged. And that's my role now with Mark. You know, Barbie and I pray for right. him and his wife every single night and other leaders that we love and know. And our goal is to encourage him, to be there if he needs us, but not to interfere, you know. And so that's been a wonderful heritage, you know, of DTS. And so I speak, I teach, I write, and it's a part-time role, but it's a great role.
Well, now that you're at this place of being chancellor, and you don't have to have all your fingers in the pudding of building buildings and tearing down buildings and convincing people that you need to do all these things yep. and raising all those funds. Right. I mean, I can't imagine. Do you know how much money you all had to raise over the process?
Well, our budget right now is around $45 million per year. Mm-hmm. And above and beyond that, we had set a goal about 12, 13 years ago of another $315 million to do what we wanted to do, programming, building, refurbishing, et cetera. Wow. And we're ahead of that that curve at this point. And everything we build at the seminary, other than the two apartment complexes, which are amortized with the rent that comes in,
right.
everything else we've done has had to be done cash on the barrelhead, done for cash. And God's been so gracious to us and the people who have rallied around us to support us. And so that was the unexpected blessing of being a president. I never thought of myself as a fundraiser, but you are if you're in that role.
Yes.
And to watch God move the hearts of people, come alongside cheerfully, lovingly, and say, hey, we believe in the mission. Let's go for it. That was an unexpected blessing of the role. And so it's just been, Barbie says, as a wife looking from the side, watching God do that over the course of 20 years. We've been at the seminary 38 years, coming up on 38 years. Watching God meet that need every single year is just one of the greatest blessings. I never laid awake thinking about that at night. I just knew God would take care of that. And Dr. Walver told me when I became president, he said, trust God and work like crazy. And we tried that motto.
Well, now that you don't have to do all those things, if there's someone else in line to do that, what do you do to relax and unwind?
Well, I get to do what I went to school to do, and that's study
and
teach. And so I'm working in my study pretty much, I would say, 7, 8, 10 hours a day. At the house, I start in the mornings with my own devotions. Barbie has her devotions. I have mine. We come together at night for a little devotional and pray together, you know, before we hit the hay. But I just love reading. I have sort of a 4-track or a 5-track study schedule. I read my Bible, and I'm reading through the Bible in a year, and it usually takes me about a year and a half because I get bogged down and love it so much. Bible, theology, ministry, leadership, and then some hobby reading along the side.
But, yeah.
Spending time with the grandkids, you know, keeps us busy, and the kids. We all get to go to the same church. We all worship together when I'm in town, and we usually eat together on Sunday noon, and finding a table for 12 is not easy.
Yeah.
But Barbie's got that pretty well scoped out.
Sure.
So we have a good time, and we love being together. Barbie and I just, people ask her, what's it like having me home? And she's always wanted me home, and we have such a blast together, so we just have fun.
So you're not under her feet then?
No. And she has her area. I'm in my study and till she needs me. But when we eat together, we play Skippo at night together. And so we've got quite a Skippo tournament going on between the two of us. But we're having fun.
Well, you're so knowledgeable, and I know that several times through the years you've been called on by the media to answer questions about what's happening in our culture. I remember after 9/11, people wanted to know from a Christian perspective, what do you see? And I think I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to ask you, as you jump up to the 30,000 foot level and you look down, what do you see in our culture right now that concerns you?
Well, I think that Jeremiah had it right when he said that the problem of Israel was they called the wrong right and the right wrong. Mm-hmm. And the amazing audacity of human beings to redefine themselves, redefine their identities, redefine their role, to redefine the world, and then to think that redefinition is okay and should be accepted by everybody else. And I was talking with a friend of mine who said it all started in the garden with the little phrase, "Hath God said?" Did God really speak to this? And I think that's the area that's, it's easy to get angry with our culture, but Ecclesiastes 7:10 says, "He is not wise who says this is the way it used to be."
Yeah.
And we can't go back, and we will never go back to whatever we thought was good, which probably wasn't all that good. But the Bible warned us that things will get worse the closer we get to the second coming.
Yeah.
And so we ought not to be surprised. Jesus said, "Don't marvel if the world hates you." And we get a little surprised by it. And he said, "Don't be." And because of, in the end of John 15, he gives us a great lessons in there. They react to us because they reacted to him, and they reacted to him because they just didn't get the Father. And so it needs to turn into more grief and prayer requests than anger. And they didn't know. They just don't know. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's the knowledge of what's true and what's not true. And I've been doing a lot of study recently in Daniel, and I've been captivated by Daniel chapter 4, when God's humbling Nebuchadnezzar, who thought he was big stuff. And he puts him on the ground for a season, about 7 years, acting like an animal, growing long hair, fingernails growing almost like claws, until he came to realize that the God of heaven is eternal. And the God of heaven gives kingdoms even to the lowliest of men. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that God raises up, as Daniel 2 said, God raises up kings and he puts them down. He's in charge of the times and the seasons. And his sovereign purposes are going to be carried out in our world. And he carries them out in the strangest of people, in the strangest of cultures. And what he uses for discipline, what he uses for blessing are his. And they don't make human sense most often.
I think back to the 70s when I first started reading the Bible. And I would read through Matthew chapter 5, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness." And then it seemed like he repeated himself. "Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you." Yeah. And we're there.
Yeah. Do we really believe that we're blessed? We may think we're cursed by our culture. And God may say, that's what they may say, but that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And so what does he think about it becomes the question.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem is we forget to think about what God thinks.
Yeah, exactly.
And we forget his blessing and his way. Is there anything you would like to share with our congregation?
You bet. I have bragged about Fellowship Bible Church of Northwest Arkansas and all of its ministries all over the world. I have counted this a rich privilege to be involved and to slide in and be a part of the series from time to time, to do like we did tonight with meet with you and Robert and Gary and at times with our wives together. That rich fellowship over the years has meant more to me, Mickey, than you know. Mm. It was affirming. It was encouraging. It was a friendship that was offered without reciprocity. It was grace upon grace in our lives. And so the travels, you've invited me to go with you. You know, we've invited you to come with us. Yeah. It's a reciprocal from that standpoint. But a long-term friendship with you and Denise, and it's a huge blessing. But Fellowship Bible Church does things so well. I don't know of another church that thinks through generational change and leadership and building up the next generation like you guys have. Just watching it for these last 20, 30 years, it's just been an incredible, incredible privilege. And I'm a part of a great church where I go to church, Christ Chapel, and they've done a great job. And it's an incredible, it's a pinch-me moment for Barbie and me to in this season of our lives, to be involved like where we are. And those two churches, we've had some golf tournaments between the two churches.
Yes, we have.
We've had some travels between those two churches. But we're just super blessed. But it's always been a privilege to come here. And I think you don't know how strong you are, how influential you are, how contagious leadership spirit that you guys create among yourselves. And the camaraderie that you have who have been working together, to me, I think a great testimony of leadership is how long has this team been together and how long have they worked together with still great friends and just love together, laugh together, work together. And that says a whole lot about you guys. And my philosophy of leadership at the seminary was find a group of people I could grow old working together, you know, for the cause of Christ and have fun in the process. And that's what we had there as well. So it's terrific blessing.
You know, it's interesting you say that because there was a time early on, and I'd just been here maybe a year, maybe two, and Robert and Gary and I went to, we rented a little conference room at a hotel, and Robert looked at us and said, "Guys, let's grow old together."
Yep.
And we really have.
Well, some of them. You're not quite as old as some of them. Yeah, but that's
yeah,
okay.
But as we sat down tonight, we just started talking about our ailments, you know, and Gary just got kicked off Facebook. And
it's what you get when you put a verse a day up there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
No, that's true. That's true.
Oh, but it's so much fun. We've laughed so much through the years. So many fun things have happened, and it's just a delight to have you here. And as I was able to share with your folks down in Dallas, you're one of those rare people. You're the smartest person in the room, but you don't act like it.
No. I mean, you may think that, but I'm not.
No, you really are. And we are blessed to have you with us here at Fellowship, and we look forward to many more years to come and wish you and your family the very, very best. And thank you for coming and being a part of our podcast.
My privilege. Thank you, Mickey.
Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. God bless you.